this week, actually today, is the yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu. Today was Zayin Adar. Zayin Adar was when Haman did the lottery to see when the Jews have bad luck, and it came out in Adar, and he saw that Moshe Rabbeinu died in Adar. He felt that it was a sign from above that he would be able to destroy Klal Yisrael. And, of course, he made a big mistake, because not only was Moshe Rabbeinu born on Zayin Adar, but Moshe Rabbeinu died on Zayin Adar, also was born on Zayin Adar, so it was a very good day for the Jews. So today is Zayin Adar, Adar Rishon, and there's a whole machlokes if Moshe Rabbeinu died in an Adar Sheni or in an Adar Rishon. I'm not exactly 100% sure, but we celebrate there's a whole machlokes if Purim came out in a leap year, and there's a whole thing on that, but I can't answer that for sure. But some people hold that Moshe died in a leap year, so I don't, you know, whatever. But we celebrate it both days. The Chevra Kadisha. Chevra Kadisha is an organization that buries people, dead people. So they have a big seuda last night, and a big seuda, because the only one that ever lived, well, it's not really the only one, because nobody didn't need it either, but Moshe Rabbeinu represents the one person who didn't need a Chevra Kadisha, because Hashem buried him. So he didn't need a Chevra Kadisha. So the Chevra Kadisha always celebrates Zayin Adar. Okay. So we're going to talk about Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm going to go into a subject tonight. To be careful how I navigate it. I'll try to navigate it correctly. And the subject's really brought to... I'm bringing it up because we're going to talk a little bit about the Gilgal of Moshe Rabbeinu and where he came from. But before that, I'd like to talk a little bit about this week's Parsha, which is Parsha's Tetzaveh. Now, Parsha's Tetzaveh does not have Moshe Rabbeinu's name mentioned in it at all. If you go through the whole Parsha Tetzaveh, it says Va'ato, and you should command B'nai Israel. Doesn't say Vayidam Hashem al Moshe, Vayom Hashem al Moshe. Doesn't mention Moshe Rabbeinu's name. Most of you know why. The reason it doesn't mention Moshe Rabbeinu's name is that after the Jews made the Egel, and Hashem wanted to wipe out all the Jews because of what they did, Hashem came to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, I will wipe out the whole Klal Yisrael, but from you, I will start the new nation of Klal Yisrael. And the very famous words that Moshe Rabbeinu said was, Macheni na misifrecha. Hashem, erase me, please, from the whole Chumash. If you're going to destroy Klal Yisrael, you're going to wipe out Klal Yisrael, I don't want my name mentioned. I have nothing to do with this Chumash. I have nothing to do with all those stories. If they go, he was a true leader. If they go, I go. Finished. Even after everything they did to him and everything he went, we had our Moshe Rabbeinu speech, right? After everything they did to him and everything he went through in life, when it came down to it, and Hashem said, I'm wiping out Klal Yisrael. Imagine God comes to you and says that from you, the rest of Klal Yisrael is going to be created. It's like amazing. That's like you're Adam. You're like Adam, the first man, the first woman, Chava. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm not interested. Macheni na misifrecha. I want to be erased. So even though God forgave the Bnei Yisrael for what they did with the Egel, but when a tzaddik is goyis, when a tzaddik says something, even not a tzaddik, when anybody says something out of their mouth, even if it doesn't come true, these people who say, you know, I swear on my mother, I swear on this, you know, I'll say that, chas v'sham, even if you're telling the truth, if it's not true, my car should explode, right? And let's say it is true, you didn't lie, right? But something's going to happen to your car. You're not allowed to let out of your mouth things like that. So even not a tzaddik, even a regular person. Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Macheni nami sifrecha, you should erase me from the Chumash." So Hashem had to erase him from the Chumash, not from the whole Chumash. So Hashem picked Parshas Tetzaveh to erase Moshe Rabbeinu's name in Parshas Tetzaveh. So Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned in Parshas Tetzaveh. Usually, today would be the 8th. Tonight would be the 8th of Adar. Usually, next week after Parshas Tetzaveh comes Purim. What's the connection? Hashem said, just like Moshe Rabbeinu, who said, if the Jews get destroyed, I don't want my name mentioned in the whole Torah. So Hashem said, I have to be at least like Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, in the whole Megillas Esther, you'll never see Hashem's name. Hashem had to say the same thing. If Haman wipes out the whole Jewish nation, I don't want to be mentioned either. So right after Parshas Tetzaveh, where Moshe Rabbeinu's name isn't mentioned, comes to Megillas Esther, where Hashem's name isn't mentioned. But I repeated many times, there was an irreligious boy in my class, probably 20, maybe 22 years ago, and I told them that Hashem's name is not mentioned in the whole Megillah. Even though it says that every time it says HaMelech, also represents Hashem's name. Anyway, that's what I told him. All of a sudden, in the middle of class, he raises his hand. Just to tell you, anybody, get Ruch HaKodesh. He raises his hand, he says, Rebbe. He says, what? He says, there's a parak in the, when did the miracle begin in Megillas Esther? So it says that night the king couldn't sleep. So the night that Achashverosh couldn't sleep, that's when the whole Geula, the whole redemption of Klal Yisrael, that's when Haman started, that's when Mordechai was rewarded, and he asked him who's in the yard, and he said, Haman's in the yard. That's when the whole thing turned on Haman, in that parak. The boy raises his hand, he says, Rebbe, in that parak, where everything turned around, you'll see the word HaMelech 26 times, the equal number of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, Hashem's name. I said, get out of here. No way, you can't come up with something like that. He says, no, Rebbe, count it. And if you count that parak, and that, I think it's parak Vav or parak Dalet, if you count it, you'll see that the word HaMelech is mentioned 26 times. Hashem's name secretly is mentioned in the Megillah. Not fair. It's not fair. What do you mean? Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not secretly mentioned in Parshas Tetzaveh. So if we're going to say that the whole thing is that Hashem is showing in the Megillah that he's just like Moshe Rabbeinu said, if the Klal Yisrael is going to be wiped out, that right, that his name's not going to be in there. Hashem said, my name's not going to be in there. You stuck your name in there, Hashem. You put HaMelech 26 times in that parak when the Geula began. Not fair. You didn't stick Moshe Rabbeinu's name in Parshas Tetzaveh. And the answer is amazing. Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned, but it is. How's it secretly in Parshas Tetzaveh? If you look at the end of every parsha, it tells you how many psukim are in the parsha. How many psukim are in Parshas Tetzaveh? Kuf Aleph. 101 psukim. Now, in everybody's name, there's a hidden name. For instance, Moshe, right? So it's spelled Mem, Shin, Hey. How do you spell Mem? So there's a Mem you see, and there's a Mem you don't see. You spell Mem, Mem, Mem. So you see the Mem, but there's another Mem at the end that you don't see. How do you spell Shin? Shin, Yud, Nun. What do you see? The Shin. What don't you see? The Yud and the Nun. Hey, what do you see? You see the Hey, but you don't see the Aleph. Again, Mem is spelled Mem, Mem. Shin is Shin, Yud, Nun. And Hey is Hey, Aleph. If you look at Moshe Rabbeinu's name, and you look at the hidden part of Moshe Rabbeinu's name, the part that you don't see, so you have Mem, Mem, you have a Mem, it's 40. You have Shin, you see the Shin, but you don't see the Yud, Nun. Yud and Nun is 60. 60 and 40 is 100. You have Hey, you see the Hey, but you don't see the Aleph. Aleph is 1. So the hidden part of Moshe Rabbeinu's name equals 101. How many psukim are there in Parshas Tetzaveh? 101. So Moshe Rabbeinu's name, even though you don't see it, is hidden, and the hidden part of his name is hidden in the psukim of Parshas Tetzaveh. So Parshas Tetzaveh and the Megillah are equal. Hashem's name is hidden in the Megillah. Moshe Rabbeinu's name is hidden in Parshas Tetzaveh. Now the question is, what was Moshe Rabbeinu saying over here? Molcheini na meisifrecha. What kind of answer is that to God? What is he saying? I'm blackmailing you, Hashem. Now listen, if you do this to the Jews, I'm telling you right now, I'm telling you, he's talking to God. God, I'm telling you, you're going to have to erase my name from the whole Torah. Hello? God could say back, I'm not going to. I don't have to. I'm Hashem. So what was this Mecheni Nomi Sifracha? He should have davened 150,000 times that the Jews shouldn't be destroyed. He sort of challenged Hashem. He said, yeah, you're going to do that? Then I'm going to do that. I want you to do this. What's going on over here? And this is how we're getting into a little bit of the subject matter and getting into tonight. I want you to take it serious, but I don't want you to take it serious. I'll try to explain to you what serious I want and what I don't want you to take serious. So let me tell you who Moshe Rabbeinu was a Gilgul of. Moshe Rabbeinu was a Gilgul of Noach. Sefer Gilgulim, Rav Chaim Vital brings down that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Gilgul of Noach. He was also a Gilgul of Hevel, that was later on. He was a Gilgul of Noach. What did Noach do wrong? Noach did wrong. He was a tzaddik. Ish tamim hayu b'day reisav. But he didn't save the world. He saved himself. He ended up in a teva. He ended up, his whole family was saved and he was saved. But the world was totally destroyed. And Rashi says that the Chachamim say, in his generation, only because It wasn't a praise. It wasn't a praise. It was a diss. That he didn't say the generation. What happened? Comes along Moshe Rabbeinu. And he is the Gilgal of Noach. And why does a person come back into this world be Gilgal? He comes back to be Misaki, to do a tikkun on what he did last time, or 2 times ago, or 3 times ago, whatever it is. So what was Moshe Rabbeinu's, what was Noach's Avera? Noach's Avera was that he saved himself and his family, but he didn't save the whole world. Along comes Hashem, and we know that the whole tikkun, to fix what you did last time, you have to be in the same position, the same Yetzihara, and you have to overcome it, and that's how you fix, that's your tikkun. That's how you fix what you did wrong last time. So Moshe Rabbeinu was put in the same position as Noach. Hashem came to Moshe Rabbeinu. First of all, who was Moshe Rabbeinu put as a baby? In a teva. Wasn't a teva. You know what a teva is? You know how big the teva was? Teva is an ark. It was a tene. It was a basket. It was a little basket, a waterproof basket. Why does the Torah use the word teva? Moshe Rabbeinu was a Gilgal of Noach. He ended up in a teva in water, just like Noach did. And Hashem came to Moshe Rabbeinu now, who was Noach, and he said, I'm giving you the same test again. I'm going to save you and your family, and a whole world is going to come from you, just like Noach, and I'm going to destroy Klal Yisrael. So now Moshe Rabbeinu had to either pass and say, no, I learned my lesson when I was Noach, that it's not good enough to be a tzaddik and save yourself. I have to save the whole world. And therefore, Hashem, Mocheni Nami Sifrecha, if you're not going to save the Jews, then I don't want to be part of this. Now, what does that do with Mecheni Nami Sifrecha? If you take the word Mecheni, it's Mem Ches Nun Yud. Mecheni is Mem Ches Nun Yud. Spells Me Mecheni, erase me, erase me. Take the word Mecheni, Mem Ches Nun Yud, and you have 4 letters. And what do those 4 letters spell? Me Noach. The waters of Noach. Said Moshe Rabbeinu to Hashem, Mocheni na, because I am not willing to listen to you, and that from me should come out a whole Jewish nation, and Klal Yisrael should be destroyed, I realize this is my tikkun, this is my test, therefore erase the Mei Noach. Erase the Avera that I did, the waters of Noach, where the whole world was destroyed. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted his tefillah, and that was his tikkun, that was his tikkun for his neshama, and he fixed what Noach did. And that subject matter of Gilgul is a very scary subject, but it's a very real subject. And there's a couple of stories that I want to talk about tonight, that are stories that are brought in the Avos Chaim and some other Svarim, about the whole thing of Gilgal. Now, the lesson to learn from Gilgal, the lesson that you need to take from it, is that a person has to realize that every action that a person takes has a fantastic effect for years and years, and children and grandchildren. I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to try to say it that people here understand it without me saying it very clearly. I'm on different medias, and I have to be careful exactly how I say it. So I hope everyone understands what I'm going to say. But I have to tell you a story that happened with my Rebbe. Rabbi Gamliel. So this guy came with a girl, and she was like 19, he was 27, and he said, you know, he found a shidduch, he found a zivig, but he doesn't understand why Hashem made him wait so long. To wait 8 years. She was 19, he was 27, he had to wait until she was 19. Why not Hashem make it? Why not Hashem make that his zivig should be born a year after him? And then he would have been 21, she would have been 20, and he would have been married 7 years before that. Why did he have to wait? That's what he asked Rabbi Gamliel. So Rabbi Gamliel said, you know, we don't know the ways of Shemayim. He didn't answer him. You know, a person doesn't know, we don't know. And they left. And he turned to me, and he said, I don't want to get into it, but people have to be very careful not to withhold having children. People go, they get married, they go to the rabbis, they get heterim. I'm in school, it's too much pressure, we want to get to know each other before we have kids. And there are certain rabbis, if a rabbi gives a heter, he gives a heter, there's nothing to talk about. If he gives a heter, then in Minas Shemayim, it's a heter. But, you know, the rabbi can only give a psak on what he hears. And if a person calls up and says, I'm sick, and I'm pressured, and I'm nervous, and I'm on pills and medicine, I can't have children, it's going to make me crazy, and I have to get better. So what's the rabbi going to say? You understand? But if it's not true, so Rabbi Gamliel said to me, her parents, 5 years, 6 years, they didn't have children. They didn't let Shemayim give them children. This boy suffered because of what her parents did. You have to be, a person has to think, you have to be very careful that every action that a person takes has a reaction, because if your kids take 4 extra years to come into the world, then this zivug has to wait 4 extra years, and then the next generation does it for another 4 years, then all of a sudden it's 8 years to the great grandchild. People don't realize that it's not a game. Life's not a game. Every action has a reaction. And that's what we learn from Gilgal, because everything you do in this life has an effect in the next life, has an effect on you and who your children are, and everything that a person goes through. B'derech Remiza, again, talking through hinting. I had a discussion a while back with a Jewish person who didn't like women. A Jewish man who didn't like women. We'll put it that way. Lashon Nekiya. Whoever understands, understands. And he said to me, they did studies, and the studies show that you could be born like that. It's not your choice. You could be born. A guy is born, he doesn't like women. And how could Hashem say in the Torah that this aveira is a to'eva? It's disgusting, and it makes Hashem disgusted. It's an abomination. He said, Rabbi Wallstein, it's not my fault. I was born, when I was 2 years old, I was playing with dolls. I was different. I'm different. I was born different. And he brought me, yeah, you can Google, schmoogle all you want, and they show you, yeah, they found a gene and a DNA and a zach and a dech, and it's not their fault. These people, it's not their fault. The whole community, it's not their fault. They were born that way, and if God had a problem, why'd he do it? And kach v'kach. It's a pretty heavy discussion for a Jewish boy who comes to me. I have to answer. I can't just walk away from him. So if you study a little bit about, you know, everybody wants to know why you're here. Why am I here? Right? What's my tikkun? Now, another thing I have to tell, because last time I spoke about this, girls got very nervous. They said, so if I fix it, I'm going to die. Because if the whole reason you came to the world is to fix something, then I don't want to fix it. I'll fix it when I'm 80, 90. I don't want to fix it now. I'm going to fix it now. I'm going to die. First of all, it's not usually one thing. Number one, it's usually a bunch of things. And number two, if you fix it, Taka, then the rest of your life, you're not going to die. If they see it in Shemayim, they want you to get more schusim, and you're going in the right direction, they give you more life and more life. They want you to do more mitzvahs and more mitzvahs. If you don't fix it, that's when you're in trouble. Because if you're not fixing it anyway, so what'd you come here for? You know, a nefesh, a neshama, doesn't want to come to this world. Does not want to come to this world. Because in this world, you can pick up mitzvahs, you can pick up a lot of averis. There's a story I told the boys last night. I think I said this many years ago. There was a story about a boy that was born without hands. It's a story that's brought down. And he grew up, and it was very hard. It was very hard. He didn't have hands. It was very hard. In those days, they didn't have prosthesis. He didn't have hands, and the kids in school were playing and playing ball and this and that. And he was very angry at Hashem. He was very angry at Hashem. A disability. He was born with a disability. We all have a question. Why is anyone born with a disability? How do you answer that question, girls? One person's born without a disability. The other person, it's not fair. I didn't do anything yet. The kid wasn't born yet. You can't say he did averis. Kid didn't do any averis. He was born with a disability. So how could he have done averis? The kid didn't do an averis. So how do we understand that? How do we answer that? So this story is written down. So he was very angry. And he came, I don't know if it was the Ari HaKadosh, but he came to someone very, very big. And he said, I don't want to be religious. I don't want to keep Hashem. This is not a fair God. I was born without hands. All the other kids have hands. They're playing and this and that. So whoever this tzaddik was, I remember when I heard this story. So he said, okay, I'm going to fast 40 days. I'm going to go up to the malachim and ask in Shemayim, I feel bad for you. I'm going to ask for you why this happened. And he came back. He said, I'll tell you what I saw. He said, you, last time you were here, you were a huge, huge tzaddik. But you once lost your temper. You were a teacher. You once lost your temper, and you smacked a boy in his face. One time in your whole life. One time. You smacked this boy in his face. And they came up to Shemayim, And they did a din. They say he davens and he learns. This man is a great tzaddik. What are we going to do about the slap? We have to do something about the slap. You have to fix that. Maybe a million hogs equals one slap. I don't know exactly how it works up there. So they said, you have a choice. You can either go down to the world and fix it, or you can go to Gehenna, burn out the Avera that you did, and then go to Gan Eden. So he says, why would I go down to the world? I'm going to go down to the world. When you come down to the world to fix one thing, right? You end up, you have one Avera. He had one Avera. There was one Avera. He hit this kid. He was perfect. He was like a perfect Esrig. He says, what am I? Sugar, I'm going to go down to that world. They erase everything in your head. You don't know. I'm going to come back with a million more Averas. I don't want to take the chance. What neshama wants to take the chance? It's a bad gamble. There's Taiva and Yetzirah here and internet and all this stuff. What neshama wants to come into this generation? What neshama wants to be born in this generation? What's the chance of that neshama to make it? Right? Who wants to come down here now? He says, I'll go to Gehenna. Take me to Gehenna and I'll burn for hitting this kid and that'll be it. So 120 mil, which is like 120 miles out of Gehenna, on the way to Gehenna, he turned to the malach that was taking him, and he said, Nu, I'm in the middle of Gehenna. It was so hot, it was so painful. He says, leave me already. He says, what do you mean? You're not in the middle of Gehenna. You're on the road to Gehenna. You're 120 miles out of Gehenna. He said, this is 120 miles out of Gehenna? I can't go there. I can't. I'm not going to be able to withstand the pain. Take me back to Beis Din. So he took him back to Beis Din. And the business says, Nu, what are you doing? And he says, I'm going back to the world. I'm going back to the world. I can't go to Gehenna. It's just too painful. He said, but I'm willing to give all my schusim. Because when I come back here, I don't want to have any averis. He says, I'm willing to give all my schusim that my tikkun should be, that I should be born without hands, so that I'm guaranteed that there is no way that I will do that Avera again, because I won't have hands, I won't be able to hit anybody. This is what that, I think it was the Arizal, I'm not 100% sure, this is what he told him. He says, you asked not to have hands. Hashem didn't punish you. You asked Beis Din, do me a favor, I don't want to have hands, because if I don't have hands, I can't hit them. If I can't hit anybody, I'm going to come back. You know what it says about Down syndrome children and autistic children? Why do Gedolim get up for them? Because a neshama that comes down to this world, that's guaranteed that it can't come back to the other world worse off. Only the biggest gedolim tzaddikim that made a mistake get a guarantee when they come down here. You're guaranteed you'll be here, you'll do your time. This is prison. You'll do your time in prison in this world. You're guaranteed, because a Down syndrome child and an autistic child cannot do an Avera, because they're not a bar da, so they cannot do an Avera. So that neshama that's in that Down syndrome child is so perfect, is on such a high level, he has to do time. He has to be in this world forever long, forever, for whatever reason. Maybe someone pulled the plug too early. Who knows what? Came from an irreligious family, they pulled it out 2 years, supposed to be on a respirator, and they pulled out the plug, and then the person has to come back. Whatever it is. But that Down syndrome child is carrying a perfect neshama, because that neshama has a guarantee that he will come up to the, he will do his time, and then he will go to Gan Eden. And that's why all the big tzaddikim and all the big gedolim were in Down syndrome. I saw it. When Down syndrome child would walk into the room, they would stand up. What are they standing up for? Because they knew that neshama that's in that child is so holy. Who gets a guarantee? Who in this room? We have a guarantee that we're going to come back to the next world the same way we came here, or better. None of us have that guarantee. So the reason that we're back here, and the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu had to come back, was to correct what happened to Noach. Well, the reason that we're back here, everybody, is to fix what we did last time, the time before, the time before. To go all the way back to the time that the whole world of the Avera that Adam did. And Mashiach won't come until all the neshamas that were in Adam will be corrected. And that's all of us. We're all part of Adam. Every neshama in this room. So Rabbi Wallstein, how do you know why I'm here? So how do I fix why I'm here? I don't know why I'm here. And the answer the Zohar says is, you have to look into yourself and see what is the hardest thing for you to do. If it's boys, then last time you were here, you didn't have with a boy. If it's money, then last time you were here, you stole money. If it's Lashon Hara, then last time you were here, you spoke Lashon Hara. Whatever you're having the biggest problem in your life overcoming, that's the plug. That's what was inputted into the chip. The chip that's, if you want to compare a neshama to a chip, the chip that's in your computer, in your system, into that chip is put what you did last time and how you have to fix it. And whatever bothers you the most, that is the thing that you need to fix. And therefore, those people who are different, who say, Rabbi Wallerstein, I'm a guy, but I don't like girls, I'm different. What does Hashem want from me? The answer is unbelievable. The answer is because you did an Avera. You did such an Avera last time you were here, or two times ago. And therefore, this time when you come to this world, you have no choice. Because what's the Midah Keneged Midah? Last time, that wasn't your Taiva, that wasn't your Yetzahara. You stepped out of the normal nature of a man. You stepped out of the normal nature of a man. And you went into a totally out of your nature. Now, what's the punishment? Now it's your nature. And you're still not, it's still a Taiva, and you're still not allowed to do the Taiva. So this guy asked me the brilliant question. And he said, and I said to him, some guys have a Yetzahara for girls. And the Torah says you can marry one woman. And there's a Chen Rabbeinu Geshe, you can marry one woman. So what's the difference between you and that guy? That guy has to walk around, and he has to control himself, and he has to look down on the floor, and he can't look at women, and he can't talk to women, and he can't be with women, and he has to be with one woman, and he has this crazy Torah for women, and he has to control it. Because last time, so he said to me something brilliant. This kid was brilliant. He says, yeah, but Rabbi Wallerstein, that guy has an outlet. He can marry a woman. So even though he has his Yetzirah for women, but Hashem gave him an outlet. Hashem said, fine, you can marry one of them. He says, I have no outlet. It's a great question. I'm not allowed to marry a guy. Not even one guy. So I have no outlet. So again, Hashem is not fair. So I answered him. I said, ah. So I'll tell you the difference. The difference is that you have to suffer your whole life. And even though it's not your nature, you're going to have to marry a woman. Because the Torah says that what you did last time you were here, or two times you were here, is a te'evas Hashem. Because the world that Hashem created to have children, to reproduce, two men cannot reproduce. And therefore what you did is such a big aveira that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's about rachamim, has no rachamim here. And the rest of your life, you're going to be miserable. And if you have to, you're going to have to marry a woman. And even though that's not where your taiva is, where you come from, you have no choice. And that is your tikkun. And I said it to him. I said, that is your tikkun. You have to suffer. So I got a phone call today. This was a shir last night. I got a phone call from Israel from a woman. And she left me a message. She said, Rabbi Wallerstein, your shir was brilliant, whatever it is, but you can't just get up in front of people and tell them that because of what you did last time, now you have to suffer for the rest of your life. It's not fair. The guy has to suffer the rest of his life. So I said, and this is what I'm going to talk about tonight. So what did you do? You stepped out of your nature. And now it's became your nature. So if a person's really cheap, right? It's not fair. One girl says to me, well, I want to have a crazy temper. Next, one girl's born with a crazy temper. One girl's born with a loose mouth. She just loves to talk. Another girl doesn't talk at all. And another girl is the calmest, quietest girl you ever met. Why does anyone in this room understand nature? Why does everyone in this room accept this? Why does everyone just accept stingy, loud, quiet, sneers, not sneers? Everybody has. We're in a world of everyone has different natures. Look in psychology. Fast temper, calm, all the different natures that a person has. Why do you just all accept that? Hashem put you in this world and I'm stingy. Why do you accept that? Why does Hashem make different natures? Why aren't we all nice people? Sweet, calm, nice people. And the answer is because you're a product of what you did last time. So last time when your nature was not to be stingy and you stepped out of your nature and decided, I'm not giving money to anybody. It's not your nature, but you stepped out. Now, when you come down this time, the only way to fix it is when it becomes your nature. So if it doesn't become your nature, you're not going to have the test. You're not going to have the test this time. You have to be in the same spot. So you went out of your nature, you became stingy. So now Hashem has to put you in the same spot. You have to be stingy. So you're born stingy. And that's why everybody has totally different natures. Mixed. This person's angry, but not cheap. This one person's cheap, but not angry. The Mishnah says there are four types of people who get angry. One person gets angry fast, forgives fast. Not so bad. One person gets angry very slow and forgives fast. Very good. One person gets angry very fast and never forgives. Very bad. So you learn this Mishnah like, what's up with this? Why are there four natures? And the answer is, when we make choices that's not our nature, we cause that the next time we come back, that it becomes our nature. And it affects our children because it becomes part of our DNA. And our DNA, of course, affects my children. Because if I'm cheap and my kids watch and see that I'm cheap automatically. And every time that a poor person comes to the door, I tell my daughter, go tell them I'm not home. Right? Go tell them I'm busy. Go tell them I'm this. So what do you think? She's going to grow up. And when the bell rings, what's she going to tell her husband? Tell him I'm not home. I'll tell him that you're not home. Because that's what you learn. It's everything. It's amazing. I mean, you can't trade. You wouldn't want to trade with God. Every person, every move you make during the day, everything you do, it controls your destiny. And things have to be changed. These people use birth control. So now, this guy has to wait 8 years. And everything has to be changed, totally changed. Where he is, how he is, to take care. Everything that a person does. Again, you know, last time I spoke about it, someone came up to me. You can't talk against all the Rabbanim. Chas v'shalom, there's heterim for health, for mental health, for this and that. But it depends what you say. You have to be careful what you say. And everything, and heterim and kashrus, it's the way you present a situation to the rabbi. That's what he understands when it comes to money, things, whatever it comes to. A person has to be very careful. Just because the rabbi said it's okay, but if you presented it wrong, it's not okay. So everything that a person does has an effect on himself and on the next generation. Look at Moshe Rabbeinu. Look at Moshe Rabbeinu. He had to stand in the same place with the same power, and he ended up winning, Baruch Hashem. But that's what we all go through this, and that's why we all have different natures. We all have different natures, but you don't want to know something? The nature that you have, you chose. You chose either by choosing that nature or by doing it last time, by stepping out of your normal nature. A person who's never angry. Hashem gave you a beautiful, calm nature. And you're busy screaming at your mother and screaming at this one. It's not even your nature. To your friends, you never scream. To nobody else, you never scream at. You're the calmest girl. If anyone asked in school, oh, she's a sweetheart. And then, you know, the mother comes to me and says, if you would hear the mouth, my daughter opens to me. And I'm like, what are you talking about? The kid is sugar. So that girl, her nature is sugar. But to her mother, she's stepping out of her nature. And she's becoming a kaisen. So what do you think when she comes back next time to fix that avera? You think she's going to come back sugar? She's going to come back with a temper. And then she's going to have to fight that temper and beat that temper. And that's so much harder. There's a story that I was told by one of my students, Moshe Segelnik. Many, many years ago, somebody had lost a young child. And he went to the shiva. And he told me over this story. Just talk about, show you what Gilgal is. So these people had lost a young child. The Rosh Hashiva came in. He said to them, he wanted to make them feel better. So he said, I have to tell you, and I heard the story after that many, many times. He said, I have to tell you a story. He says, it's a very famous story. He says, there was a king, and the king's best friend was a rabbi. Many, many years ago, I think during Spanish time in Spain. And it was a king in Spain, and there was this Jewish rabbi, and they were very close. And there was a time before the Spanish Inquisition that the Jewish and the Spanish the king and the queen, they were very close. And then, of course, everything changed. And the king had a child, and the rabbi had a child. Now, what was happening at that time was that the Goyim were telling the king that the Jews were praying that he shouldn't have any children. His wife was like married. They were married for a long time. They didn't have any children because the Jews wanted to take over the kingdom. If the king has no children, then anyone could take over the kingdom. So this rabbi went and he had Klai Yisrael, so they were fasting and they were davening. And to make a long story short, the king had a child. And this rabbi had a child. What happened? The non-Jewish people, they said, what are we going to do now? Now the king's not going to listen to us anymore. We had told them that they were praying against him. So they came up with a great scheme. They're going to go and they're going to take a pillow and they're going to go in the morning to the child's infirmary and they're going to suffocate it to death. And they're going to tell the king that the Jews were worse than they thought. The Jews prayed that the king should have a child and that the child should die. And that would hurt the king even more. And that night, this baby was born and these guys were planning it. And that night, they went in and they killed the child. They killed the prince. This rabbi had a crazy dream. And in his dream, he saw what they were doing. And he realized that if the king wakes up and finds the child dead, and they're going to come say that we prayed that that child should die, he's going to wipe out all the Jews in Spain. He's going to wipe us all out. So he went to his wife, and he said to his wife, we have to do something. We have to take our baby, and we have to switch. We'll take the dead baby. We'll put our baby as the prince, right? When the goyim come the next morning and say, oh, look, they killed your child! The king's going to walk in, there's going to be a little baby. They're not going to know the difference. It's a few hours old. And we have to be mice and nefesh. And that's what they did. They took their child, and they switched. And the next morning in shul, everybody was crying. The Rav's son died, crib death. It was a terrible thing. And these guys couldn't understand the miracle that God did for the Jews. They knew they suffocated the baby, and God did Tchias HaMesim. And the next morning, the baby was alive. So they became very scared, and they backed off. Now this boy grew up as a non-Jew in the king's palace. When he became 13 years old, the father decided that he's going to tell this boy who he is, that it's really his son. Of course, he's not going to believe him. But he went to the prince, and he told the prince, I want you to know this is what happened. We switched, whatever it is, and I want to start learning with you. To make a long story short, he told the king, sort of like Moshe Rabbeinu in the palace, he told the king that I want to teach him. A king has to know everything. And they started to learn together, and of course the son realized who he was. Because he didn't believe it at first, but when he brought his wife to meet the prince, the prince saw in the mirror that he looked exactly like his mother. But of course he wasn't allowed to tell anything to the king. And to make a long story short, the king died, and the prince became the king. And he treated the Jews, in fact, I read the story inside, in the end, he ran away from Spain, and he practiced as a Jew, he ran to Israel, wherever he ran away, disappeared, it was the king that disappeared, one morning he was gone, because he was a Jew. Anyway, to make a long story short, you got to hear this story. So, the story starts off about this woman and this man who had no children, who came to this big Rebbe. I have to look inside because I really have to tell you the names. It's important to know the names. They went to some big tzaddik and they were complaining to him that they didn't have children for 10 years. And he gave him a bracha and he told them that next year at this time, this is of course much after this prince died, the king died, hundreds of years later. So they came and the Rebbe said, you're going to have a child in exactly 1 year. It's going to be a boy and you have my bracha. And this was a very big tzaddik. They went home, she got pregnant and she gave birth. 2 years to the day the child was born, on his second birthday, he died. The woman and her husband came running back to the Rebbe, said, what'd you do here? You gave us a bracha to have a child for 2 years. Better we wouldn't have had a child. So Rebbe said, sit down. And he told them the story of the switch of the rabbi and the whole thing. He told them the story. He said, I want you to know who this child was that you had for 2 years. The prince in the story, who really saved the Jews after that, for as long as he was king, nursed for 2 years from the king's wife. The queen thought it was her kid. So he nursed non-Jewish, non-kosher milk from non-Jewish women for 2 years. He came up to the next world. He was a tzaddik. You have to understand, not only did he protect the Jews, but he left in the middle of his kingdom and went there to Israel. He left everything. He was a very big tzaddik. And he came up to the next world, and they said, a man that saved the Jews, Pikuach Nefesh saved the Jews, Gan Eden. He came to the gates of Gan Eden, and they said, in Gan Eden, you go to yeshiva and you talk Torah, your mouth can't come into Gan Eden. Your mouth has 2 years of milk from a non-Jewish woman. We can't help you. He went back to Bezin, he says, what do you want from me? So Bezin said, fine. We'll do a tikkun. We'll send you down to the world. You'll nurse from a Jewish woman for 2 years. And once you do, you 2 years nursing from a Jewish woman, that will be the tikkun of nursing from the non-Jewish woman, and then you'll die and we'll take you back to Olam Haba, to Gan Eden. So the Rav turned to these two people and said, you were chosen to be mesaken, to do the tikkun for this neshama, and this neshama is now sitting in Gan Eden because of your pain. You're talking, lost a child after 2 years. It's very nice to tell me stories. The bottom line is the person lost a child. But you should just know, and that's my point tonight. Everyone's thinking, they're like, okay, Ray, great story, Rabbi Wallerstein. But why those parents? Why do they have to suffer? Right? Why do they have to suffer? You could have given the two-year-old kid to somebody else. Why those parents? So everyone has the answer, because they can handle it. You know, why is it this? We don't know the answer. Because in a Gilgul, in a Misakein, in a Tikkun, she needed to have a kid for 2 years. We don't know the answers. But what we need to understand is that what you see is not what you get. What goes on in this world, everything, and that's what we learn from Gilgul. Everything has a reason. It all fits into a certain place. He brings down, I think I told you the story of the horse from a couple of weeks ago. I told you the story of the horse where he whispered in the horse's ear. Did I say that here? Right. So that was a Gilgul. He brings down the Avos Chaim. I said the story last night. The guys went crazy. So be very careful with this story. So he brings out a story in Avos Chaim that there was somebody came to the Ari HaKadosh, a young boy. He was a young boy, and he asked for a bracha. And the Ari HaKadosh said, "Listen to me," he says, "you're going to leave Tzfas. When you leave Tzfas, you're going to come to a city, and you're going to stay by a guy's house. And this person has a daughter, and he's going to read you a shidduch, this daughter. And he's going to offer you 600 gold coins." In those days, it wasn't how many years the guy's going to learn, like 5 years, 7 years, life, career, whatever. They just paid up straight up front. They gave the guy dowries, 5,000, whatever it was. So this guy's going to offer you 600 gold coins to marry his daughter, right, to help support you. That's your zivig. That's your zivig. Okay? He goes, and that's exactly what happens. And he marries this girl, and she's amazing. She cooks for him. She's kind. She's sweet. She takes care of him. She mends his clothing. She mamish takes care of him like he's a king. And they're so in love with each other. And a year to the day of the wedding, she dies. And he comes back to Tzfas, and he says to the Arizal, "Why? This was my zivug. This was the one I was supposed to marry. I was so happy with her. Why would Hashem take her away?" So the Arizal says to him, I have to be careful with this. Okay. The Arizal says to him, "This one that you were married to, in hundreds of years ago when you were here in this world, was your partner in business. Wasn't a woman. This neshama was a man. And he stole from you. And he stole from you 600 golden coins. And the agmas nefesh, the pain that you went through that year, the pain that you went through, that you lost all that money and you didn't know how to make it up, was a pain that stayed there. This man did tshuva, but he never paid you back the 600 gold coins. He couldn't find you. And he did tshuva, and he came to the next world, and he was clean of all his averas. But he had this crazy big avera that he did, ben adam l'chavera. He stole 600 gold coins, and not only that, it's scary. This is a very scary story, because not only it's the 600 coins, but the aggravation you got to come back for. You aggravated somebody, you got to come back for aggravation if you don't get mechila." And he couldn't find him, so not only had to pay back the 600 coins, he had to get mechila on the aggravation. So Bezin Shamayla said, "Good, we'll send you down. You'll be his wife in the body of a nekeva. You'll be his wife. And the $600 that you stole, her father will pay you. And the agmas nefesh and the pain that you went through for that year, she's going to give you back. That you'll have a nuchas nefesh, somebody that's taking care of you, somebody that loves you. And you should just know that Arizal." This is a story from the Arizal, it's not Stam. "You should just know that neshama is now back in the next world. And now you'll find another zivig that for the rest of your life. That neshama you had to be with 1 year." So just from learning this, you know, you're going to go back, and why is Rabbi Wallstein talking about Gilgul? It's such a subject, he shouldn't talk about it. First of all, it's this week's parasha, number one, it's Moshe Rabbeinu. But number two, I want you to understand, I want everyone here to understand that what you do now affects what you're going to do next time. You shouldn't have to come back next time. But if you do, it's a Gilgul. A Gilgul means over and over and over and over. Who wants this? Who needs this? Let's end it. Let's fix what we did wrong. Let's fix what's bothering us, the hardest thing that we're trying to work on. Let's fix it, even if it's our nature. It's not an excuse. It's your nature because you made it your nature. Hashem doesn't give a person a bad nature. Get this in your heads. Hashem doesn't give a person a fast temper or cheap or a bad mouth or a person who has a problem. Girls, tell me, I have a problem with sneers. What does that mean, you have a problem with sneers? I don't like to get dressed sneers. Listen to what you're saying. It sounds not normal. It sounds like that's why you're here. If you have a problem, you understand, it's a problem. It bothers me. I have to be dressed not sneers. Then you made that choice. Because Hashem is not going to program a person to come to this world and want to be a parrot and want to walk around half-dressed or want to walk around with a crazy temper or a foul mouth. Hashem doesn't do that. You program. What does it say in Rosh Hashanah? You write into the book, not Hashem. What you do is your program. So to this woman who said to me on the phone, she was very broken. She said, "So according to your speech, I'm stuck. The rest of my life I'm going to suffer because I messed up last time." I said, "No. Nope. Why? Because, listen carefully, teva is a person's nature. It's almost impossible to break your nature. A person has a certain nature, right? But there's a thing called that, something that you do hergel, nasik hergel, it becomes teva. Something you do over and over and over and over becomes your nature. So a person who's born with a temper, and the reason they have that temper is because last time they didn't have that temper, and they still stepped out and had a temper, even though it wasn't their nature. Now it became your nature. There's a way to change your nature. Hergel, something you continually doing, changes your teva. And once you change your teva, it's much easier to do your tikkun, because it's not so hard to break your anger anymore. How does a person break their anger? Once, twice, three times. Swallow it, swallow it. I'm angry, I want to scream. I'm going to count sheep, I'm going to jump on my head, whatever I'm going to do. I'm going to make a bracha, shahakol niyeh b'varo. Also, I think I'm going to say that story, Mitzvah Hashem, on the Shabbaton, where this girl had a right to be angry. She ran to the sink. Instead of screaming at her mother-in-law, she said, took a cold drink, said, okay, now I'll talk to you. So even a teva, even a nature that you caused, that you wrote in your program, in your chip, you can change by breaking it, by continuously over and over and over breaking that nature. When a person comes and wants money, and you're so stingy, and you say, it doesn't matter, I can't stand to give money. Oh, hi. And you give them money. The first time, it's murder. The second time, it's a little easier. The fourth time, it's a little easier. Same thing in Shalom Bayis. You're right. People think that in Shalom Bayis, between husband and wife, if you're right, you have a right to murder the guy. Because I'm right. He came home late. It's my anniversary. You're 100% right. But if you're gonna use your temper, that's what you're going to become. So however hard it is, and it takes a lot of work, I'm not telling you it doesn't take work, to break a teva takes a lot of work. But you caused that by what you did last time. So it's a lot of work. So hergel, nasik, teva, something that you do over and over. So I said to her, you don't have to suffer for the rest of your life. Whatever this thing is that you have to beat, that's so hard, that became your teva, that it bothers you when other people are doing well. It's your teva. It's not fear Hashem. All the girls, they don't care. Another girl gets engaged, gets married, doesn't bother other people. Ooh, it makes them crazy. Why her? Why not me? And it's their nature. They're not bad people. It's their nature. It's because last time you were a nice, sweet girl, and it wasn't your nature, and you made yourself jealous, and you stepped out of your nature. That is the Mida Kenegi Mida. What wasn't your nature, you made your nature, now it's your nature. And now to fix it, you have to break that nature. And it's hard. I'm not telling you that it's easy. But we don't want to come back here again. It's very hard. You don't understand. I want to scare you tonight. It's very hard to come into this world, and it's very hard to die. For the neshama to leave the guf is a terrifying, terrifying thing. To separate a guf and a neshama, the guf suffers in the kever terribly. Terribly. Imagine to watch the guf totally rot and be eaten. It's you. You're watching yourself be eaten by maggots. It's a terrible thing. It's a very hard thing. Okay, so I won't do a tikkun. I'll come back in Gilgal again. Maybe I'll end up with a rich husband. Maybe I'll end up with a big house. You know, I'm not scared of Gilgal. I'll party and I'll come back again. That's only because the Yetzer Hara hides from you. It's not easy to die. It's not a party at all to separate a neshama. It's separating a car and the driver, but you're a horse and the rider for all those years. They know each other. The neshama and the guf know each other. They're very connected to each other. And when a neshama leaves a guf, it's in a lot of pain and hovers for 7 days, for 3 days, for 30 days by the yard site. It's not a party leaving this world. You don't want to come back here again. And coming into the world is also, but it's on a different level, very hard to come into this world, to sit in the mother's womb for 9 months. You forget the mouth. When he smacks you, don't only forget your learning. You forget all the suffering in the womb. It's not a party in there. Being squished with your fingers up your nose and your elbows and your toes and it's 98.6 degrees at all times. It's like a rainforest. It's like and it's dark. They're not showing any movies in there, right? It's no party. It's very hard to come into this world. Better not to come into this world, says the Mishnah. This is not a party. We don't want to come back here again. We want to sit in Olam Haba with the Gedolim and the Tzaddikim and the Avos and the Imais. We don't want to be back. You know, people, oh, big deal, take a Gilgal. I'll come back again. No, I'll party like, you know, I'll come. No. No, and then what do you know what's going to happen next time you're here? What kind of life you're going to have? You know what kind of life you have now? You have to try to make it better and do what you can. Be misake what's bothering you and get out of here. So I'm talking to this girl who called me from Eretz Yisrael. The Kadosh Baruch Hu always sends the messages at the right time. So I found this unbelievable book I told you about last week. And I want to read you a story from this book. And then we'll be finished. Well, never going to be finished, but we'll let you go. So I have been very busy in Arnava. You see butterflies all over the place. And most of you know my butterfly shear. That's what started Arnava. You suffer in a cocoon. You go from a caterpillar, you get wings. And Arnava is here to show you how to fly and how to use your wings. Very beautiful. I have a new story for you. Am I going to change the logo? No. And when I tell you the story, you'll understand why I'm not going to change the logo. Fascinating. So we talked about last week about Mishnichas Adar Mam B'Simcha, and that the pain that a person goes through, if you use that pain to grow, right? So that's the biggest simcha. The biggest simcha is realizing, even when you're in pain, that it's a gilgul and it's a tikkun, and that you're going through what you have to in this world, so that when you come to the next world, to sit in the next world, if anyone even got a glimpse of it, then there wouldn't be no bechira. I never saw the next world. How do I know it's true? Because the bottom line is, if anyone in this room saw Gan Eden, you can never do an aver again. So you have no choice. You lost your choice. Or Gehenim, you lost your choice. Totally. I'm still waiting to see my father in a dream. He passed away 9 years ago. And I complained to my Rebbe. I said, I know a lot of guys, the year that the father died, he came to him in a dream. Or 2 years later, or 3 years later. My father didn't come to me in a dream. I'm waiting for him. Remember what Gamliel told me? He said, if you saw your father, what he looks like in the next world, in a dream, you got two problems. One, you're going to go there with him. So he told me, he says, you're going to go there. I was very close to my father. He says, you're not going to be able to bring your neshama back. He says, and two, when you see where he's sitting in the next world, you have no more bechira. Because even I speak to you and I give you speeches and everything else, there's a half of an eighth of a tenth of a percent in my head that maybe the whole thing's not true. Because I haven't been there. You have to admit to yourself, until you're somewhere, until you see it, I believe in it, and I believe in it, and 100% believe in it. But until you see it, you didn't see it. You weren't there. So Gamliel said, if you saw your father in Gan Eden, you have no more Bechira. You're done. You'll never do an Avera again. You're not going to have Bechira. You will know. Right now I say, I need Mamim, I believe in Tchias HaMesim, I believe in Mashiach. I believe in the next world. That's one of the questions I ask you. I believe in the next world, but it's my choice. I have a choice to believe in the next world or not to believe. Once I see my father in Gan Eden, do I have a choice anymore? I see the next world. It's no more choice. You don't believe me if I tell you right now. I have a window, right? There's a window in this room, and I tell you right now, everybody, I want you to know, it's dark outside. So you don't believe me it's dark outside. You know it's dark outside. But if I tell you that when you leave this room and you go outside, it's a freaky thing. I can't explain it. The sun's out. And there's someone in this room like, psh, whatever he says, I believe. And she opens her pocketbook and she puts on her sunglasses because she has real emunah. That's belief. But opening a window and showing you the sun and telling you the sun's outside, that's not belief. So showing me Gan Eden, showing me my father in Gan Eden, then I believe in Gan Eden, that's not belief anymore. That's not emunah. So my Rebbe gave me Musar. And my Rebbe said, Wallerstein, you're not where you need to be. Because if it made no difference in your emunah seeing your father or not seeing your father, then you'd be able to see your father. So you're not where you need to be in emunah. You still have this millionth of a question. I still haven't seen it. Therefore, he says, when you get to the level where seeing Gan Eden and not seeing Gan Eden, it doesn't make a difference. I'm already on the level that I don't need to see it. He says, then you'll see him. So that's why we don't see a lot of stuff is hidden from us in life, because we're not on that level, and Hashem will never take away your choice. A person always has to have choice. So I'm very big into the pain, right? No pain, no gain. You got to work. Person's got to work. Nothing for free. Just the generation that's not your fault, it's your mother's fault, your brother's fault, school's fault, the economy's fault. And then if you tell the therapist, what are you talking about? I have the greatest parents and the greatest school. So they'll send you to a hypnotist. Because the hypnotist is going to find out you forgot whose fault it is. But it has to be someone's fault, not yours. It's our generation. Everyone walks around. It's not my fault. And that's why we are where we are today. It's nobody's fault. The guy can murder, and they, this woman murdered this guy, whatever, her husband, right? She stabbed him 35 times. The defense lawyer got up and said, it's postpartum, whatever, hormones, right? She walked away. She was found not guilty. Okay, so now, I hear you. First time you stabbed him, it was, well, what about the other 35 times, right? In America, it's not her fault. It's, she was pregnant, and it's her hormones' fault, and it's nobody's fault. I don't come from that world. You don't grow in that world. In that world, you don't grow. You walk around, and you fail with an excuse. That's what you do. You end up at the end of life being a failure, but you have a lot of excuses. This friend took me off the derech. My mother took me off that derech. My Rebbe took me off that derech. It's my wife's fault. Adam. Hashem said, what's going on? It's my wife's fault. Right? He said to Chava, what's going on? It's the Nachash's fault. The Nachash had nowhere to go. Couldn't blame anyone else. Right? So we live in a world where it's everybody else's fault. What I'm trying to teach my Talmidim, it's not about fault. Fault means you failed. Nobody comes home to, you know, with an excuse, I got 100. If you come home and you say, Ma, you want to hear my excuse? The mother knows, okay, it's a 50, right? Because nobody comes home and says, you want to hear my excuse? And they got 100. When we play ball and a guy loses, right? So, yeah, you know why I lost to Charya? Because the ref, he was cheating. Nobody comes home and says, you know why we won? You want to hear my excuse for winning? Nobody makes an excuse for winning. So if you have an excuse, you're lost. Excuses, you don't win with excuses. And you know what? I go against a little bit against it. Hey, you know, Wallerstein, you can't just get up and say that. You know, people have excuses. Yeah. Okay, so they're going to sit there and they're going to fail with an excuse. So what do you do for them? You help them. You help them. A guy has a broken leg. Okay, so you never have to walk again because someone broke your leg. Or if you're a normal person, you get his leg, you set it, you put it in a cast, right? You get him therapy and he can run again. No. Not his fault. We're going to leave him with a broken leg for the rest of his life because somebody else broke his leg. Sugar, no, they're crazy. What are you talking about? So I, Baruch Hashem sends me messages. So he sent me a new story in this book, which is amazing. And it's about an oyster. Anyone here know what an oyster is? It's not kosher. It's this little thing with two shells. And in the middle of the two shells is this soft, mushy thing, right? That's called an oyster. Now, it's not kosher. It's a shell. It's a shellfish. Now, I never knew this till I read this in the Sefer. The oyster, right? He's like a clam, whatever. So he's got these two shells that are close together, and the oyster lives inside, and it protects him. But it has to open up. It has to open up to get water to produce air, whatever. It has to open up to get water. Sometimes, when the oyster opens up to get water, a grain of sand goes inside the shell. Now, if you've ever seen an oyster, it's like a mushy marshmallow. It's extremely, extremely soft. And a grain of sand, like a grain of sand in your eye, it's very, very annoying. So what does the oyster do? The oyster goes ahead. Now, this little piece of sand is bothering it very much. So it secretes a liquid to surround the grain of sand. And it secretes it and secretes it and secretes it till it's extremely round. When it's extremely round, it doesn't bother the oyster anymore because it's as round as the oyster, so it's a round object. A round object doesn't bother the oyster. So through the pain of the grain of sand that's in the oyster's guts, the oyster secretes and secretes and secretes, and it's sometimes a lot and sometimes a little, and the oyster produces pearls. My wife finds out I took this as a prop. I'm dead. Now think for a second. Think for a second. I don't know who's buying pearls, but a good strand of pearls, big size, good strand is $35,000. These, by the way, don't get nervous. They're fake. I'm not that stupid. $35,000. Now my question is like this: Hashem makes diamonds and rubies and sapphires and gold and silver and copper and all these valuable things don't come from a live thing. Why does Hashem take the pearl and that it should come from the oyster? The pearl should come from the ground, just like diamonds and rubies and everything else, to teach us the most important lesson, maybe bigger than the butterfly, that the pain that's bothering every person, while you're trying to fix that pain, while you're trying to make the pain less, at the same time you're creating pearls. Because by fixing the pain, you're creating something that's coming from the pain, a lesson that's coming from the pain, a tikkun that's coming from the pain, that in the next world will be your pearls. A whole strand of pearls. A million pearls. And the more round the oyster makes it, the bigger it is. The bigger it is, the more it's worth. The more you work on your problems, the more you work on the things that are bothering you, the harder you work on them, the bigger the pearl. This is from Ibdut Hashem B'Simcha. I don't know how the sefer fell into my lap. It's absolutely amazing. He says, the oyster is aware of a foreign object, and it responds. Slowly and patiently, the oyster wraps the grain of sand in a thin, translucent layer. After some time has elapsed, something of great value is created in the place of the oyster's greatest pain. Life's greatest moments of pain can lead to a better understanding of our purpose in life. That's how a person has to look at the tikkun and the work that a person has to go through. That's how a person has to look at it. This week's parsha is a parsha that talks about the Kohen Gadol and all his clothing. And all the different things he wore, a me'il and a kesones, and all the different things that he wore. And it's very important, because one of the most important things by a woman, her pearl, is her tznius. She doesn't need to know a black gemara, she doesn't even need to know a rashi. But she has to be a tznua. A woman has to be modest. And what we learn from this week's parsha, that in the Kodesh Kedoshim, in the Holies of Holies, when you're serving Hashem, it matters what you wear. Who cares what the guy's wearing? He's a Kohen Gadol. He's the biggest tzaddik in the world. So let him wear a long white sheet or whatever, a nice linen clothing, whatever it is. What's so important what he wears? And everything he wears represents, the tzitz represents what you think. And the mail and the bells represent Lashon Hara. Everything he wears represents something else. Clothing. I was telling the boys last night, clothing was created in the beginning of Chumash. It says, Hashem, Vayaslam, Koisnas Ar. The first clothing. That's why it's called Lord and Taylor, by the way. Whoever heard of Lord and Taylor? Yeah, that's where it comes from. From the Bible. That's what they say. I'm not kidding. That's where it comes from. The first thing of clothing that was mentioned in the Torah is Hashem made for Adam and Chava, Kosnas Or. And that's why it's called Lord and Taylor. Lord was their tailor. That's where it comes from. If it's not true, that's what they told me. I don't know. But the bottom line is that Hashem, why did Hashem make us clothing? Why do we need to wear clothing? Animals don't wear clothing. It's because when we ate from the Eitz Hadas, and our guf and our neshama was one. Your body was as holy as your neshama. Could you believe such a thing? A human body was as holy as your soul. It was one. When we ate from the Eitz Hadas, they were separated. The guf and the neshama became two entities. And the guf represents decomposing, taiva, all the lust in the world. That's what the guf represents. So Hashem said, listen carefully. So Hashem said, after we ate the Eitz Hadas, he did us the biggest favor. And he said, cover up your guf. From head to toe. He put it on us. Cover up your guf, because your guf represents the low part of the human being. And if a person covers up their guf totally, then all you can see in the person is his neshama. That's what you see in the person. So God was the first. Why did he give us clothing? Because a human being, what we're ashamed of is our guf. What we're ashamed of is our body. Because our body used to be together with our soul as one. And today it's just totally two different things. Therefore the Torah tells us, be a tznua. Cover up your body. And the more you cover up your body, the more your neshama is going to shine. And people don't understand that. People think the more they show their body, the more people will look at them and realize them. Yeah, the more they're going to look at your guf. They're going to look at the disgusting part of the human being. The beauty of a human being is not their body. The beauty of a human being is your soul. Probably one of the ugliest beings in the world is the human being. What are you talking about, Wallerstein? How could you say such a thing? Take an orange and peel it. And look at it. You can look at it. You can eat it. Peel an apple. Peel a banana. Peel a potato. Peel a carrot. Peel a human being. There's nothing more ugly. The internal organs of a human being is the most disgusting thing in the world. And there's a Zohar on this. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu put Or, how thick is your skin? 1/16th of an inch. He took all these ugly organs, which unless you're in medical school and they throw up the first time they see a body, right? You would not be able to look at a human being. We're totally ugly. Our organs are ugly. Our veins and the sinews and, ugh! They had this picture on a bus of this guy that was showing the human body, whatever it is. I was eating in Kosher Delight. I flipped my steak sandwich. I'm like, get that bus out of here. Ugh. Showed his whole body with his eyeballs and everything. Disgusting. Gross. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu did a chesed, and he covered it with a 1/16 of an inch of skin, and all the ugliness of the human body is covered with skin. You have to know who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, this body needs to be covered with clothing. That's not, the body is not the greatness of a human being. The neshama is the greatness of a human being. And what's clothing, girls? What's clothing? People walk around. Did you see what I bought? Did you see my dress? Did you see my coat? Did you see this? Did you see that? And the brand name and the shman name and all these different things that a person wears, right? Think about it for a minute. The Imam Lawyer says this. Your Imam Lawyer was written a long time ago. He says, don't be such a big shot human being. He says, you have four types of clothing. Cotton comes from a plant. So what are you, such a big shot? You're walking around, hey, check me out, I'm wearing a plant. Wow. Okay, my plant says the Gap on it. My plant says, I don't know what's in right now, Juicy Fruity, whatever these things are, right? So they took a cotton plant and they put Juicy on it. Ooh, I have a Juicy. Stay away from me. Stay away from me. Okay, so that's person cotton. So you're walking around as a human being. Oh, beautiful, I have a plant. Then there are very rich people. Rich people, they buy themselves silk. A silk blouse and a silk scarf. What's silk? The excretion of a worm. What the worm makes, that's what you're wearing. The excretion of a silkworm is silk. It comes from a worm. So she's walking around. Hey, check out my Chanel silk scarf. It was just came out of the worm. It's godless. I mean, I'm really special. But if you can't afford the worm, you can afford the lamb. Now, I have a beautiful new wool scarf and a new wool sweater. Where does the wool come from? Comes from the back of an animal. A lamb. They shear the lamb, and that's where they make wool from. So far you have three choices. Excretion of a worm, a plant, or the back of an animal. There's one left. Linen. Now the Gemara talks about linen, that there is no smellier water in the world than water that you have to soak flax. To make linen, you have to soak a plant called flax. When you soak this flax, the water becomes so filthy and so smelly that there's all halachas about if you're in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, if you're allowed to soak flax because it's so disgusting and it smells so bad. It's also a plant. So the Maamar Leah says, what are you excited about, human being? What are you wearing? It's either a mink, which is an animal. You're either wearing an animal, a cotton plant, the remains of a worm, what comes out of a worm, Or plant. What are you wearing? So some kid last night screams out, Rebbe, polyester. I said, yeah, I want to see which guy's going to get up here and show me he's wearing polyester. Who's wearing polyester? Nobody's wearing polyester. So the answer is that the chashivas, the importance of clothing, is not what it's made out of. And not the label in front, and not the label in back, and not the label on the inside. And I'm talking to myself, I'm not talking to you. Because I like brioni ties. And I like nice clothing. I'm just as bad. I'm talking to myself. You're just listening, right? But the bottom line is that you have to understand that the reason that we have clothing is to cover up the goof, to cover up the low part of the human being. And if you cover up the low part of the human being, you know, it's like a light. The more you cover up the light, the straighter and the stronger the beam that you're not covering. So the person who's at tznua, the woman who's at tznua and covers her body, And the man who covers his body, and the body is not that important, so what comes shining out? His neshama comes shining out. And it happens to be that it's brought down that even at the end of life, a person who's busy with their body a whole life, when the neshama leaves the body, it's much more painful. Because if you're busy with something your whole life, and then you have to leave it, it hurts a lot more. Doesn't mean that a person shouldn't take care of themselves. A person has to be dressed, and has to be clean, and has to take care of themselves. But don't get yourself too crazy about it. Because in the end of life, the neshama leaves the body, and no matter how hard you worked, and you exercised, and you did that, whatever it is, we all end up the same way. Everybody ends up the same way. Nice speech, Rev Wallstein. Very depressing. Very depressing. So, what do we get out of tonight? One, that a person has to understand that everything that we do in life has an effect not only on us, but on our generations, and our children, and our grandchildren. We also understand that we can make pearls. Everybody can make pearls. I was going to say tonight, that the gullus that Klal Yisrael went through, and I'll end with this, that the gullus that we're going through, we're all making pearls. We're suffering for 2,000 years. We're suffering so much. So what are we doing when we're suffering? We're going through the suffering, and we come out anyway. We're making pearls. Hashem doesn't wear a necklace. We're not making pearls. It would be really nice, you know, and end. And we're making the necklace for God to wear when Mashiach comes. No. He doesn't wear a necklace. But what we're doing is we're building the Beis HaMikdash. Because those bricks that are made of Eish, and I told this to the boys last night, the third Beis HaMikdash, which is going to be here very, very soon, for sure, is made out of fire. How can you walk into something that's made out of fire? So I'm a Kayin. Hashem's going to send out a Beis HaMikdash in fire. I'm going to walk in there and get fried? How's that going to work? It's a mistake. The Beis HaMikdash made out of fire, it's made out of the fire of each one of you. The Beis HaMikdash that's made out of fire is from your soul. For all the times that you held back when you wanted to say something and you didn't say something, that's fire. For all the times you got up and you said Tehillim with fire and with tears, that's fire. That Beis HaMikdash, the third Beis HaMikdash, will never be destroyed. You know why? The first two Beis HaMikdash were destroyed, they were made out of stone. The third Beis HaMikdash is made out of all of us. And that can never be destroyed. Klal Yisrael can never be destroyed. It's our fire. It's our pearls. It's our going through hard times. We're all going through hard times. And turning around and saying to Hashem, Gamzu L'Tayva. You know, I got a piece of sand and it's in my eye and it hurts. And what I'm going through hurts. But I'm going to come out of it. And by coming out of it, I'm going to create the Eish and the bricks that are going to build the Beis HaMikdash. You should all be Zeicher, everybody in this room. There's a lot of people going through a lot of stuff. There's no question. And that little oyster on the bottom of the sea, he's in a lot of pain when that little pebble walks in. Just focus on this. Focus that it's very painful right now, but what comes out of it is going to be very valuable. Hatzlacha Rabbah.